Hello and welcome to this new ASI podcast series. Today, I'm going to be talking to Director of Assurance and Risk, Cameron Jones. Hi, Cam. How are you today?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Rhiannon. And pleasure speaking with you today.
Welcome. So what hot topic are we going to be discussing today?
I'd love to talk about how to build a really good ASI audit team.
Cool. So as a lead auditor, if I'm about to plan for my next ASI audit, how should I think about the auditing team?
So putting on my lead auditor's hat for a second, a lead auditor, he or she thinks initially maybe yes, they understand the performance standard very well. And that most likely is the case. But do you really have the expertise? Ask yourself the question, do you really have the expertise to cover what is a pretty comprehensive standard? And we're talking the performance standard here. 11 principal areas. Do you really have the expertise across all those 11 areas? For those smaller entities, particular downstream factories, manufacturing facilities, look, you very well may. For some of those larger upstream facilities like bauxite mines, alumina refineries, aluminium smelters, or in fact an integrated entity that might have one or more of those, it's probably unlikely you're going to have the expertise across all those facilities across the entire standard. So where are you going to need that support? Who are those people that you're going to bring in, whether they be ASI accredited or not? And we'll get to that a little bit later, but really building the best team for the job.
That's great, Cam. Thanks. Are there any special type of considerations I may need to think about as the lead auditor?
Those considerations for an audit are generally social, cultural, environmental, logistics, even climatic and seasonal issues as well too. So we'll get to those a little bit later, but looking more at the technical issues as well too. Language. Do you have enough competency in your audit team to engage in the local language, but not just the local language, local dialects as well? And particularly in parts where ASI certified entities are present, for example, in Guinea, in Brazil, in parts of Asia as well, and even Eastern Europe, there are other languages that may actually be more preferable for external stakeholders and employees and contractors to engage with the auditor team. So have a think about those language issues first up. Secondly, unsurprisingly, following on from that are those cultural differences as well too, and those social nuances that you may be fairly familiar with, but when you get onto site, are you really confident and sure that you understand those? You may come from a certain part of the world where it's perfectly fine to engage in an individual in a certain way. Maybe it's your tone of voice, the type of language, the lack of small talk, or maybe too much small talk. Things vary a little bit too. So having that local expertise really, really can help, and also get the best out of your engagement on site in terms of really connecting with those individuals. And as part of the ASI witness assessment program, I've been to a number of ASI audits and witnessed firsthand some fantastic auditing techniques. But I've also seen at times where there have been deficiencies where you would go, oh, you're not quite reading the room. If you'd had someone local in there, I think you may have got a better response. So just thinking about those cultural differences as well too. Of course, if you're auditing in your home country, your home province, well, it's probably not going to be an issue. But invariably, ASI auditors, you're well-traveled people. You're often out in other countries and you do have the experience in that country, but do you really have that really that cultural insight that is so important to engaging with your internal and external stakeholders when you're doing the audit? The other aspect to consider, and it follows on from those cultural differences too, is look at it from that, what we phrase, a gender lens as well too. Particularly in certain parts of the world, and look, I won't name them here, but we know where they are, where there are issues with respect to perhaps male auditors interviewing females, certainly in a one-on-one situation. Maybe a group environment is better and those individuals, particularly female employees and contractors, may feel more comfortable. We've actually seen firsthand as well some great initiatives by ASI auditor teams where they've got female employees in a room and they've actually had a female colleague dial in teleconference style and engage in a female-only environment. And as a result, the interviewees have felt a lot more comfortable, a lot more open, and shared that information. Whereas had there been, for example, a male or two in the room, it might have been a different story. So again, I won't go any further into that. But again, that appreciation of the gender lens. And look, one could argue that that's applicable across all countries, but more so in certain countries as well. But always consider that. And as we know, there are aspects of the ASI performance standards specifically addressing those gender-related issues as well too. So food for thought there. Finally, before we move on, Rhiannon, is also, and it's less related to what your team may look like, but it helps with resourcing these teams as well. And it's those physical constraints that may hit you when you're undertaking the audit. Things like weather and climate. Are you going into an area that is subject to large rainfall events? You might be in the wet season, in the tropics, for example. Do you have contingencies in place? The logistics. What if something goes wrong? What if a flight is delayed? What if someone gets injured? If you're the only auditor and you go and twist your ankle, or you come down with a virus, the flu or COVID, what happens then? What happens to the audit? Is it put on hold? How does that work for the rest of the audit with respect to scheduling? Is it still going to work? And are you still going to get the appropriate outputs? So consider that. And again, we'll get on to what a good audit team may look like in a minute, Rhiannon. But looking at those issues with respect to flexibility.
Okay, that's great, Cam. There's some really interesting points that you've raised there. And I think actually looking at some of the points you've mentioned with those considerations, it's something we could probably delve deeper into in following podcasts to really pinpoint some of the skills you might need to really identify those issues and learn best how to address them from an ASI lens. But just touching on them briefly, how best would you address these kinds of considerations?
I think it's looking back at yourself as an individual. Firstly, I see this as a multi-pronged approach or a multi-staged approach when you're musing or hypothesizing through what the audit team may look like. Now, I appreciate there are cost and logistical concerns. We'd all love a great, you know, multi-person team that comes in for a few days and just smashes the audit really hard, five or six people. But invariably, that's not going to happen because people are busy on other projects, and the entity, the member, your client, is probably not going to pay for that. So we need to find a happy medium. So I think take a step back and think of yourself as a lead auditor and go, can I do all of this on my own? And do I have the technical expertise and experience to address all of that on my own? Now, for those downstream facilities, and you're an experienced auditor with 20, 25 years, yeah, you probably are. You're probably going to be that experienced and well-known in the standard. Mm-hmm. But yes, you probably could address it. And also for those larger facilities, you can cast your net wider. One auditor might be in a particular part. Another auditor might be in another part. Another auditor might be out in the community. So seeing those teams where there's 3, 4, even 5 in some situations that we have seen, where an audit team is multifaceted, multidisciplinary, and gives you the option of seeing multiple aspects of the entity at once, for example, a port or a harbour or a rail corridor or a production facility and so forth and so forth. So having a team that has a number of people is really going to help you.
So when we're talking about, you know, expanding that scope and strengthening that team, as a lead auditor, who at ASI could I talk to about any kind of support, or does ASI offer any kind of support for me to do this?
Yeah, no, great question, Rhiannon. And we do get asked this question a fair bit. We get occasionally the old, please help. I want to build my team. What should this look like? Where could I go? I would say the first port of call, Rhiannon, would be to look at the ASI website at our list of registered specialists. These are people who are highly specialized, highly experienced across not just aluminium, but a number of sectors. And they bring specific set of skills that could be used or harnessed by the lead auditor in an audit team to really address those specific issues that may be material, or that lead auditor may be a little bit deficient in his or her experience. The ASI registered specialist, I think at last count, we might have about 20 to 25. And I have seen these registered specialists, a number of them actually be engaged in audits as technical support personnel, really adding value. They understand the standards. They understand the industry and the supply chain, and they have specific skills that can be used in audits. So the list of registered specialists is on our website, and it lists their in-country experience, their specific disciplinary skills, and I would encourage all leader auditors to look at that.
That's great, Cam. Thanks for those tips. I think really when we're talking about building the best possible audit team, tips like that are really great, and having that as a resource to draw on, that really adds value, I feel. So what are the benefits of having a more diverse audit team and adding more people into the team, expanding that team and to create that diversity? What are the key benefits there, do you think?
Look, there's a few, Rhiannon, and there's one that, coming back to the cost piece, there's actually efficiencies in doing this. One may think initially, oh God, I've got a large team to manage. This is going to be really, really inefficient. But when you look at it, having a larger audit team, initially the entity or the member might be taken aback by having such a large team. But invariably, you can get in and get out quicker because you've got more people on site. And I think that's a real selling point to an entity to say, look, hey, we're not going to run an audit with one person for 8 or 9 days. We can come in with a team of 3 or 4. We can hit this pretty hard and we can be out of your hair in 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. And coming back to that flexibility piece that I'd mentioned a few minutes ago, Rhiannon, as well, too, is just having more people there, having a team as opposed to an individual, allows the lead auditor to direct and cast, right, we would like you to go here and do that mm-hmm. particular part of the standard. Oh, that individual that we were going to see today is suddenly called in sick, has an issue at home with the family, he's unavailable, right, we're going to send you here instead, and then you can go there. So it just allows a bit like a little bit pieces on a chessboard as such. It allows that mobility of the audit team as opposed to just having one person trying to do it all. The other thing too is fatigue. And I think it's also not only fatigue from the entity being audited, but the auditor, it's him or herself. The auditor gets fatigued, particularly in some of those, you know, hotter parts of the world as well. You're doing an audit on your own 7 or 8 days straight. It is very fatiguing. You're going to be more susceptible to illness. You're going to be tired. You may miss critical components, critical responses. So again, having a larger team is going to keep everyone fresh as well.
That's some really interesting points, Cam. And I think that really reinforces what you spoke about with the different considerations, because I think sometimes we can get really focused in on very specific aspects of what we think considerations means. But actually, it's very broad. And, you know, having this building your dream team is really about getting the best value from the audit and increasing capacity without being overstretched. I think that's the key piece here, making sure no one person is stretched so thin.
Yeah, and look further to that, Rhiannon, I've seen this at audits too, and watching from afar as being a witness assessor as well, as seeing an audit team at the end of the day, maybe over a quiet drink at the end of the day, just getting together and quite literally comparing notes and just discussing and getting different ideas. And it is a great way as well to get that second and third opinion as well. Look, I saw this. What did you see? Oh, yeah. Okay, you know what? Yeah, the entity's doing some really good things. Yeah, I was thinking of raising maybe a minor non-conformance. But actually, now that you've seen that and you've seen that, it's quite literally the comparing of notes to go, you know what? There's enough here to suggest conformity to that criterion of the standard. And then conversely, getting a second or third opinion as well. And look, the performance standard has a little bit of subjectivity. There's no question about that. It's not an accounting standard. There is a little bit of subjectivity, and having that second or third opinion does help formulate and triangulate and cross-reference to get the appropriate outcome of your audit too. So we see that a lot when we go out and witness the audits, and it's a really good aspect of the audit is to see these teams of three or four get together and discuss the day's findings, as it were.
That's great, Cam. Thanks. I think you've really outlined exactly what lead auditors should be looking at when they think of building their audit team. Have you got any additional tips or points you want to add in before we close?
Just a couple little other things to add on to our discussion as well. And it comes back to those considerations I talked about before too, and looking at how best to resource those. We've had a bit of a chat about the ASI registered specialist, but you can cast your net much wider than that too. And we do see this successfully done. They don't necessarily have to be an ASI registered specialist. And invariably they're not, because they might be a contact that an auditor's used on a previous audit for a different sustainability scheme, particularly a translator. If there's some language language issues that needed, especially around local dialects that we may see in parts of Africa and Asia and Central America, for example, notwithstanding even Northern Australia as well too. So looking at those language abilities in the audit team, and also other technical specialists, again, not necessarily ASI affiliated, aligned or accredited, but getting those technical specialists in just to help fill any resource gap, any expertise gap. Again, we're seeing more and more of this being done by ASI audit teams to really good effect. You can actually see it come through in the deliverables. You know when they've got a team with some technical specialists in, because the audit findings just seem very, very punchy, and they're written by someone who really knows their stuff. So that's what I'd like to just leave you with. And I think probably finally too, in those parts of the world where there are the Indigenous peoples, aspects and issues to consider as well too. We have IPAF. ASI IPAF too, and we have had a couple of individuals from IPAF be involved in audits before, and again, really provide that local community and local cultural aspect as well too, not to mention the local language, the local cultural understanding and so forth. So I think we will see that growing in the coming years too, as IPAF's greater involvement in the audit process.
Thanks, Cam. That's great. I think it's been a really illuminating conversation, and I would like to talk to you a bit more about some of the things we've touched on today, but I'll save that for our next podcast. I really appreciate your insights, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, thanks, Rhiannon, and good chatting with you.